Y'all set?
Yeah. All right. Good morning. I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. We've never done anything quite like this. This is going to be an interview with, I can't say he's a chess master. No. That's an official title. Yeah. Yeah. But somebody who's devoted their life to chess. And I promise you, if you don't know anything about chess, you're still going to get a lot out of this. I promise. There's some really good nuggets in here. I'm excited to see where this goes today. So, Grant's a modest guy, but I'm going to read this bio because this sounds really cool. You ready? Grant is a certified senior tournament director with the United States Chess Federation, the official governing body for chess in the U.S. Grant founded Fellowship of the King Chess Club in 2005, originally here at Newsong. He's been on the boards of the Ohio Chess Federation and the Ohio Scholastic Chess Federation for several years and is past president of both. He has organized and directed over 100 scholastic and adult chess tournaments on the local and state levels, and he's the author of the book, A Newbie's Guide to Chess Tournaments. Let's give it a hand for Grant. Yeah. Yeah. And he's ours, right? All right. So, Grant, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit and tell, I've read your bio, but just tell us a little bit about how you got started with chess.
Well, I had an uncle who taught me how to play chess up here in Columbus. We lived in Cambridge, and whenever we'd come up, I don't know how we got started. I asked him over Christmas why did he start teaching me chess? Did I ask him, or did he ask me, or, you know, I'm not sure how that all got started. But so he's the only one I ever played with, because he's the only one I knew who knew how to play chess. And when I got to high school, I joined the chess club, because now I could play chess every week. And every week, I lost every game. And I don't know why I even stuck with it, but I did. And it was kind of interesting, because a few years later, I go back and play my uncle. He had been the best chess player I ever saw. Well, it's the only chess player I ever saw. But all of a sudden, I started winning. And, you know, it just struck me that I was in this club, and I was kind of the weakest player in the club. We were all advancing. Oh. I didn't realize it because I was always comparing to these people, you know. But once I got out and played somebody else I was used to, you could see how things mm-hmm. had progressed. So that was kind of interesting. And after high school, never really played much at all. But then when my kids started getting a certain age, I don't remember, we started teaching them how to play. I thought it's something they would enjoy. And they, I think all but one of them actually did end up playing in some tournaments. But before we started this chess club, I ran into our high school chess advisor at my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And she came up, and she didn't say, "Hi, Grant, how have you been? It's been a long time." She didn't say anything like that. Her first words were, "What are you doing with chess?" It's like, nothing. You know, I don't know. But that kind of sparked starting Fellowship of the King Chess Club here. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what led to that. And it's has always sort of struck me that there is power in passing comments. You never know what little thing you might say to somebody can really have a major impact on them. So,
now, you made a big trip recently. I know we were talking about that. Yeah. Tell everyone where you went.
So I was invited to go down to Nashville in December and help direct a tournament that had over 1,500 kids playing at one tournament. And that sounds really impressive until you hear that the reason I went down there was for training to go back down in May when I'm going to be helping direct a tournament with over 6,000 kids playing at one time. So,
wow.
Now, obviously not just me. But so that's kind of cool to get involved at that kind of a level with things.
I have to imagine there's a lot of camaraderie among the court. You kind of get to know the people in the mm-hmm. community.
Right, yeah. So it's a lot of fun. You know, chess tournaments end up feeling like reunions, except it's not a year between reunions. It's, you know, every few months or whatever. Yeah. So,
tell us a little bit about what happened here yesterday.
So yesterday we had our 12th annual Brain Freeze tournament. I started this chess club, and a lot of, actually, we had like 30, 40, 50 people coming every week, and all of a sudden, and most of it was the youth, which was great, but all of a sudden they decided that was it, the novelty had worn off, and so they disappeared, but we had a couple people from the community still coming, and that's one of the reasons we had started it, was to try and have some sort of presence for the church in the community, an outreach of type, and maybe attract some more people in. And so when everybody disappeared and we just had two or three people coming, I started asking them, how do we get the word out to other people about our little club here and get more people to come? And they said, well, you should run a chess tournament. I said, okay, how do we do that? I mean, I'd never been to one before. And so they hooked me up with a couple of guys here in the area who were kind of the lead people doing chess tournaments, and so they got me started, and we did that. And what we found was kind of interesting. We did it originally to raise awareness for the club, but after we ran it, what we found out was it makes kind of a nice fundraiser. And Scholastics, there's a lot of Scholastic tournaments going on around the city, and well, the nation, and because of having volunteer labor and not having to buy food and, different things. In the 12 years that we've done this, I think we've raised close to $20,000 for the church.
Wow. So. And where does that money go? Doesn't it usually go towards some particular...
Well, as the organizer, my view on the thing has always been, I give the money to the church and it can decide where it goes. I think a lot of it has gone to support missions, mm-hmm. And various trips. I think on occasion they've used it to do some sort of improvement to the building or that sort of thing.
Wow. So our topic today is life lessons from chess, mm-hmm. and that's a little bit of background now. So let's maybe move into when it comes to playing chess. I'm kind of like you were with your uncle. I never really win. As a matter of fact, when my wife and I were first married, I was going to teach her how to play chess. And so the first time I taught her how to play chess, she beat me. And she's never played me since. She went out a winner. She's never going to play me in chess again. So that's my life lesson, that I'm a loser when it comes to chess, but there's a lot more to be gained from the it's more than a game, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really interesting that, think about checkers or cards or whatever, and it's fairly straightforward what the material you have to work with is. But in chess, there's six different types of pieces, and they all have different functions and roles, and when you see them working together, it's just it becomes almost an art type of thing. You have to work really hard at it, but just when you see things kind of come together, it's just really neat to see that happen.
It's more than just learning what the bishop does or the knight or mm-hmm. the rook. It's that's pretty quick to learn that little bit,
mm-hmm.
but then what to do with them, that takes a while.
Well, yeah, and one of the things about, one of the main things about chess is that you always have to be thinking ahead and looking ahead. It's not enough to know, well, I can do this, so I will. There has to be a purpose behind that move. Mm-hmm. And as you're trying to think about, okay, what can I do, then you have to start thinking about, well, what can my opponent do in response to that? And so one of the things we usually have to teach, especially kids as they're learning chess, but even adults who are fairly new at it, is never play hope chess, which is, well, I'm going to do this and I hope they don't see it, because then I can really get them if they don't see it. Well, you always have to assume they're going to see it too. Chess is one of the few games, I think, where each player has all the information available. There's nothing hidden there. Now, someone may have studied harder and be able to recognize different patterns and strategies and techniques and so on, but it's all there. There's nothing hidden. There's no chance in the game itself. So if you win against somebody, it's because at least in that particular game, you played better than they did. And one chess master once said, it's funny, I've never defeated a healthy opponent. Because every time they lose, they say, well, I wasn't feeling good, or I had a headache, or I stayed up too late last night. You know, there's always some, you just got lucky. It's like, no, in that game, he played better than you did. So.
I like that. So there's six different types of pieces that each have different functions. And that sounds a lot to me, kind of like 1 Corinthians 12 and 14.
Yeah, and I thought a lot about that because the queen, for example, is the most powerful piece in the game. But even the queen can't win the game by herself. She has to have other pieces of the army, and it is a war game, has to have other pieces of the army supporting her and playing supporting functions in order to accomplish the ultimate game of the goal of the game, which is to checkmate the opposing king.
Yeah, wow.
And it's really cool when I said it's almost becomes an art form. It's because you see these things starting to work in together and just the pattern that they form. And every piece has a different function. And even the pawn, which people who aren't real familiar with chess kind of realize that's kind of the weakest piece. You know, they're incredibly important. And they have a lot of power, especially when they work together as a group. And so I just think in life, that's kind of a lesson there. We all need each other and work together and support and so on, and we have different roles. The pawn is, by the way, the only one that can get to the back rank and change into something else more powerful. So
so let's see, if I've got eight pawns, can I get eight queens?
Well, in theory, you could have nine because you've started out with one
to
begin with. Okay.
Wow.
I've never seen that happen. I did see a game, and again, in Scholastics, Scholastic chess is students K through 12 playing. And in some of these, it almost looks like they're playing checkers instead of chess. They're not sure what they're doing. But one game in particular, I remember seeing this kid, it's like, well, I can get to the back rank and make another queen. And he had like four or five or six queens on the board all at once. And my thought was, you know, if you can't win with one queen, let alone two queens, six is not going to do you any good. And in fact, at some point, the more of these you get, they start interfering with each other because they've got so much power. And
I guess I would think more power is a good thing. How can they interfere with each other?
Well, because their power extends so far, there's a situation in chess called stalemate, which is where the opposite king is not in check, he's not being attacked directly, but he has nowhere to go. Everything else around him is bottled up. He has no move that he can make, and that's called stalemate. That ends up being a draw.
Hmm.
And so you've got all these queens on the board, and you think you should win, but you don't win. You draw.
Hmm. So you overplayed.
Yeah, you overplayed your hand. And so, it's the various pieces working together and having different roles. And I've kind of seen that in the chess community in kind of a similar way because I've seen a lot of people who are really into this game and community and so on, a lot of them have different goals and things that they're trying to accomplish. So there are players who their goal is to be the next world champion, you know, and they just really study hard and they play everywhere they can, every opportunity they get. Others, it's just I enjoy spending time with my friends and this is what we like to do, and so it's a good way to pass the time. There are coaches and parents who, some of them, I want the next world champion. I want to be able to coach them up or bring them up. Some coaches I've seen use chess as a way to encourage kids who maybe couldn't excel at the traditional sports or academics or something where that's where they kind of gain their, you know, their confidence and so on. But for whatever reason, chess is a way that they can really succeed because it's all them. Again, there's no chance. If you win, it's because you played the better game. And so they start gaining confidence through this media, and that starts spilling over to other areas of their life. And there was a movie recently, I don't know if anybody saw it, but it's called Queen of Katwe. And it's about this girl in Uganda who grew up in the slums, and you read the book, and it's just, I don't know how anybody survives like that. And through a series of, actually a sports outreach ministry, she becomes introduced to chess, and she becomes the national champion. Wow. And it actually, you can see how it starts changing her life. I mean, she's able to lift herself out of poverty and get into more secure housing, and just affects her family. And so now, it's not chess per se that made that change. It's just the thing that in that particular circumstance helped things move along. But what I see in the chess community is when people start having arguments or disagreements, not about the game, not about the rules, but about what we're doing with chess and what's its role and so on, most of the time, the conflict is because this guy wants the next world champion and this guy is just trying to help inner city kids. And they've got different perspectives. They've got different goals that they're trying to accomplish. And instead of appreciating the importance and the role of the other person's, what they're trying to do, they argue about which way it should be. It should be this way versus that way. And sometimes I think in the Christian community, Christians can fall into that. You know, I've got a certain way that I'm practicing my faith, and if you're not practicing it that way, then I've got to help you see the light. I've got to help you improve. As opposed to, you know, we've got a tapestry. We've got a body. Each member of the body has a different role. And if everybody was a foot, we couldn't see anything. And if everybody was an ear, we couldn't walk anywhere.
I think Sammy's a kidney. He talked about that last week. Yeah.
Well, and I've felt like, I heard one pastor in his message say, sometimes I feel like an appendix. You know, it serves no known purpose and can be removed at any time. I'm still convinced someday we will find out what its real role is. Just because we don't know what it is doesn't mean it doesn't have one.
Right.
And, you know, I don't, somehow I just feel like chess is something God has called me to. I don't know why. But, you know, I've been involved in a lot of different things over my life. And it just seems like with this particular role, I just seem to have the most impact. It's something I enjoy, but I can see results from it. At least I can't go out and say, yes, I've seen 50 people saved because of doing chess. But somehow I just feel like God has some role for me to play in this way. And I was talking about the power of a passing comment. I've been doing these tournaments for about 12, 13 years, and there was one particular... Well, at the time, he was a boy. I think he might have been in junior high or maybe freshman in high school when I first met him. And he came to a lot of the tournaments that I was involved in. And, I mean, we knew each other by name, but it's not like we shared life stories or we knew everything about each other or whatever. We just kind of recognized and said, hi, Brandon, how you doing? And so he graduated from high school, went on to college. We kind of lost touch because he stopped playing in these tournaments. And a couple years ago, it turns out he went to work for someone I have a business relationship with. And she said, do you know so-and-so? And said, yeah, I know him. He told me you were his role model.
I said, wow.
What? I said, I know who he is, but it's like, well, I mean, for whatever reason, you know, I was somebody he was able to look up to, and it kind of inspired a certain... mode of conduct or what, I'm not even still sure, you know, but I think that sometimes what we do, when God calls us to do something, we don't necessarily see the immediate impact of it. I think he's going to use that, you know, Paul said some plant seed, some water, some harvest, you know, Different things we do may have different impacts, and sometimes we may never know. Or it could be that if I continue in this, and you know, when I'm 65 or 70, something dramatic is going to happen as a result of having spent all this time. You know, I don't know, but so I sort of go on faith that this is something he wants me to continue with.
Wow, that's fantastic. So I know you can move your pawn out like one space or then maybe two spaces. And it has sometimes to do with opening up a path for the bishop, but then you don't want to block some. And there's different like legendary opening sequences and all this. I have no idea. I'm just moving. It looks good to me, right? For those who are getting started in chess, and we'll apply this to life also, but how would you advise someone who wanted to get started?
Well, again, learning how the pieces move is, of course, the first important thing. But, again, you always have to keep in mind the ultimate goal of the game is checkmate, is to put the opposite king under attack, and he has no way to escape. Nobody else can block the check or take the piece who's giving the check and so on. And everything else is subservient to that. So it's the ultimate goal that we always have to keep in mind. And sometimes in a game, again, the queen is the most important piece, the most powerful piece. And sometimes I'm just going to let the other person take my queen because I've got something else that's getting ready to checkmate the other king, and the queen has no role in that, so it doesn't matter. But they get kind of sidetracked because, oh, I can get the queen, you know. And they don't see what else is coming if they do that instead of defending. And so having a queen is great. I love having a queen, you know. I love having two queens, you know. That very powerful and so on. But that's only secondary to the main purpose, which is to checkmate the king. When you're opening with a pawn move, you're not just moving a pawn, you're starting to exert influence in a certain part of the board. And the purpose of that is to get you through the game so that you've got an advantage of somehow in order to ultimately checkmate the king. So that's the end goal. And it just really struck me as we were even just getting ready for this and thinking about these different things, it struck me how like the Christian life that is.
Where's the connection? Help me there.
Because the ultimate goal, I think, in our Christian life is to live a life that is exemplary, that is glorifying to God, that brings him glory. Once we have salvation, that's sealed. We can't mess that up. Okay, we're going to get there. But in the meantime, the main goal then is just to glorify God in our lives. And everything else is secondary to that. And so, yeah, I'm going to hold on to my queen as long as I can in most cases. And so, yes, in my life, there are certain things I'm going to do because that's important either for financial security or because I just like doing that or whatever. But we have to be willing to give those things up in some circumstances if they're not serving the ultimate goal.
So Jesus said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world, forfeits his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? So you're saying that even if I can clean up all the opponent's pieces and I have this big pile of dead pieces over here that I've claimed, it's all about protecting the king, though. If there's some way that there's one piece that finds its way to get my king, then I may have gained all the other pieces on the board, but I lost the ultimate objective then.
Yeah, I had a parent one time ask me, well, how could my son have lost the game? He had more pieces than the other person. It's like, well, that's not how you win the game. You win the game by exerting checkmate. It doesn't matter how you did it or what the balance of power was.
Hey, Noah, could you put the next slide up there for us? So when you look at all the pieces, I find it interesting, just looking at the pieces, that the tallest piece is the king, and it lifts the cross above all the other pieces. Yeah. That it's all about the king. The game is about the king. So when you sit down to play chess with someone and you take the king in your hand, remember that when Jesus was standing before Pilate, Pilate says, "So I hear you're a king." He says, "That's right, I am a king. And for this reason I was born, and this is the whole reason I came to testify to the truth." And we have to remember that Jesus is the king. And when he said when he is lifted up, that he will draw all men to himself. And so he's, and in this board, the king has lifted the cross above everything else. Goes back to what you were saying about the one purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the whole game is about the king.
Right. I find it interesting, though, that let's go back to this pawn thing. So if I can get a pawn, number one, this is a really the smallest piece on the whole board. If I can get him past all those other more powerful pieces to the back, explain how that works.
So the pawn is the only piece in the game that can become another piece. And so if it gets to the back rank of the opposite side, it can change. You can trade it for, well, you have to trade it for one of the other pieces. You can't get another king, but you can get another queen, which is the most common thing, or bishop or knight or rook. And so it transforms into something else. And again, going back to, you got to keep in mind the ultimate purpose, I'd say probably 80% of the time you're going to get a queen with that. About 15 to 16% of the time you're going to get a rook, which is the next most powerful. But there are times when you want to trade it for a knight, because that's what you need to finish the game, to accomplish the checkmate. So you always have to be looking at what all the options are and what all the possibilities are.
Hmm. You know, I find it interesting that as I was looking at the board from the gospel perspective, Jesus is kind of like the pawn also, because he gives his own life to bring back somebody from the dead. We were all dead in our sin and trespasses, the Bible says. But when you've got a pile of dead pieces over here on the board, you get to bring one of those back to life when the pawn gives his own life in exchange. And this verse that I just read, that what will a man give in exchange for his soul? There's nothing any of these pieces that have already been claimed, that have been taken out of the game. There's nothing they can do to get back on the board, except when a pawn gives his life in service to the king, then that piece comes back from the dead and has a new life on the board again. And that's what Jesus did for us. I think the gospel's really, really portrayed an amazing way there. Yeah, boy. So you talked about playing hope chess. You know, and I think a lot of people live their life hoping that they're going to go to heaven. You know, they're going to do some random things, seemingly random things. I'm going to be good to this person today. I'm going to hold my temper tomorrow. And they think they're hoping that's enough to get them to heaven. So how does that apply to your story?
Well, when I was growing up, you know, grew up in a really good family. We went to church all the time. Good moral character, you know, all that sort of thing. And but I can remember very specifically when I was probably in high school, even into junior high, a lot of times I would, as I was going to sleep at night, I would lay there and ask myself, well, have I been good enough today that if I died, I would go to heaven? And how can anybody know? I mean, I've heard all these things and so on. And I know I heard the gospel and the message of salvation. And I went up to a few altar calls and went forward at a couple Billy Graham movies. And you know, had heard John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would have eternal life." I mean, I'd heard that, okay? But it wasn't until, for whatever reason, my freshman year in college, And I was going to Campus Crusade and some different things. And I was reading in Ephesians. And I came to Ephesians 8, and it said, for it's by grace that you have been saved through faith, and not as a result of works that anybody but can, so that anyone can boast, but it's the grace of God. It's a free gift. And all of a sudden, that just really hit me. It's like, oh, okay, that's what it is. You know, it's not how good have I been today. I want to be good, yes, but that's not what secures my salvation. That's not what secures my eternity in heaven. And so I can't say that my lifestyle changed in any dramatic way as a result of that, but I was so much more at peace and relaxed. I wasn't worried about where I was going to spend eternity after that.
So Hebrews 11, that faith is the assurance of things hoped for. You know, we hope, I hope this is the right move, right? But knowing that's the right move is a different story.
Right.
And that's what faith in Christ does for you. You know that when you follow the Holy Spirit that he's placed inside of you, you can rest in that and know that you've made the right move. Well, our time has already gotten away from us. I've really enjoyed this talk with Grant this morning. And if you have not made Jesus the King in your life, we would love to pray with you this morning. Grant or myself or anybody else here, if maybe Christ was once the King, but you've gotten distracted by other things on the board, other things in your life, and you need to make him first place again, we would love to pray with you this morning and tell you further how you can come to know the King and the truth that he came to talk about. Anything else you'd like to say before we wrap things up?
It's just chess is so much more than just a game. You know, it really has a lot of lessons for life and for business. And it just always amazes me how anybody ever came up with this thing and made it the beautiful thing that it is and that it all works. But if anybody wants to learn to play, I'd be happy to talk to you. So.
All right. Yes. And we would love to talk to you about chess or about salvation.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, it's time to take the offering then. And if anybody wants to play Grant here on the chessboard while we're taking the offering, come on up. You're welcome to do that.
You might win.
You might win.